This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 461 as we enter the 16th month of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Gaza. Israel has continued its systematic campaign of destruction of Gaza, especially in the north, through the start of the new year. The head of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees Legal Office, Philippa Greer, posted this video on December 31st and stated, quote, "Gaza's carcass. More homes convert to graves as the year draws to a close. Vast areas are stripped down to a bare shell. As conditions for life decompose, the lifesavers, the truth tellers, and the aid providers are killed and detained from blackened hospitals, scorched vans, and shelled humanitarian facilities. There is no space for the living, and the graveyards are full. 2024 fades, trust in our shared sense of humanity along with it." The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza officially recorded the killing of 395 Palestinians and 936 injuries between December 30th and January 8th alone. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, reported that during the first 7 days of the new year, at least 74 children were killed in Israeli attacks. UNICEF's executive director, Catherine Russell, said that, quote, "For the children of Gaza, the new year has brought more death and suffering from attacks, deprivation, and increasing exposure to the cold." The agency warned that the continued lack of basic shelter, combined with winter temperatures, pose serious threats to children, with more than 1 million children living in makeshift tents, and with many families displaced over the past 15 months, children face extreme risks. Since December 26th, 8 newborn babies have died from hypothermia. In a feature we published on January 4th, Frozen to Death, our contributor Tagrid Ali writes that, quote, "Children, particularly infants, bear the brunt of the suffering in winter. They are ill-equipped for the cold and generate less body heat than older children or adults. With famine stalking Gaza and no protection from the elements, children are already physically weakened, leaving them less able to fight off hypothermia." Tagrid profiled grieving parents and Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah, the head of pediatrics at Nasser Hospital. Al-Farah told the Electronic Intifada that his department has been receiving more than 5 cases per day of children suffering from hypothermia. Tagrid writes that Sila Al-Fasih succumbed to the cold on Christmas Day. She was just 2 weeks old. Her family, originally from Gaza City, lives in a dilapidated tent with no nylon over it to give protection from the rain on the shores of Al-Mawasi Beach in Khan Yunus in the southern Gaza Strip. At night, Sila's mother, Nariman Al-Fasih, 35 years old, said that the family only has 3 blankets to protect the 5 of them. In addition to Sila, there is Nihad, 2 years old, and Rayan, 4, from the freezing cold. It wasn't enough for Sila. Al-Fasih woke at 4 a.m. to breastfeed, only to find her baby daughter unresponsive, her skin a deadly pallor of blue. For more, read Tagrid Ali's feature, Frozen to Death, on electronicintifada.net. On our last live stream, we reported on Israel's abduction and subsequent disappearing of Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya, the director of the Kamal Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia in the north of Gaza. The hospital was surrounded and destroyed by Israeli forces on December 27th, after more than 80 days of relentless attacks because doctors refused to abandon their patients and staff. Abu Safiya has still not been heard from, although the Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor said it had received information that, quote, "his health has deteriorated due to the torture he endured during his detention, particularly while being held at the Sede Tayman military base in southern Israel." Euromed Human Rights Monitor warns of the grave risk to his life following patterns of deliberate killings and deaths under torture previously suffered by other doctors and medical staff arrested from Gaza since October 2023. The human rights group added that it had collected testimonies, quote, confirming that Israeli soldiers physically assaulted Dr. Abu Safiya immediately after he left the hospital on Friday, December 27th. He was then directly targeted with sound bombs while attempting to evacuate the hospital in compliance with orders from the Israeli army, Euromed added. The Israelis, quote, subsequently transferred Dr. Abu Safiya to a field interrogation site in the Al-Fakhura area of Jabalia refugee camp. There, he was forced to strip off his clothes and was subjected to severe beatings, including being whipped with a thick wire commonly used for street electrical wiring. Soldiers deliberately humiliated him in front of other detainees, including fellow medical staff. He was later taken to an undisclosed location before being transferred to the Sde Tayman military camp under Israeli army control. Recently released detainees from Sde Tayman told Euromed Human Rights Monitor that Dr. Abu Safiya, quote, was subjected to severe torture, leading to a significant deterioration in his health. This occurred despite him already being injured by Israeli airstrikes on the hospital, where he worked tirelessly until the facility was stormed and set ablaze by Israeli forces. The Israeli army has attempted to mislead the public regarding Dr. Abu Safiya's detention and torture, Euromed stated. Pro-Israeli media outlets circulated a misleading promotional video portraying his treatment as humane, even though he was tortured and humiliated immediately after filming. On January 2nd, Physicians for Human Rights Israel had submitted a request on behalf of Abu Safiya's family to obtain information about his condition and facilitate a lawyer's visit. But the Israelis claimed to have no record of his detention. Euromed Monitor warned that Abu Safiya could face a similar fate as Dr. Adnan Al-Bursh, head of the orthopedics department at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Dr. Al-Bursh was killed by torture at Ofer Prison last April. Another doctor, Abu Safiya's colleague Iyad Al-Rantisi, who was the head of the obstetrics department at Kamal Adwan Hospital, was also killed by torture at an Israeli Shin Bet facility 1 week after he was detained in November 2023. Euromed added that Israel concealed his death for more than 7 months. On Tuesday, Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya's mother died of a heart attack. As we reported, her grandson, Hussam Abu Safiya's son, Ibrahim, was killed by an Israeli drone strike in October. Hussam Abu Safiya led the funeral prayers for Ibrahim before burying him in the hospital's courtyard. And at the time, he accused the Israeli army of killing his son as a punishment for refusing to abandon the hospital and his staff and patients. With the total decimation of Kamal Adwan Hospital, as well as the Indonesian hospital, and the prevention by the Israelis of any medical workers to enter the north of Gaza, there is only one hospital left, which is barely operating. The aid group Relief International reports that Al-Auda Hospital in Jabalia is the last medical facility in the north, and it is hanging on by a thread. On January 3rd, Al-Auda received orders to forcibly remove all hospital staff and patients, quote, or else the facility would be bombed, including all of those inside, Relief International stated. The group added that the hospital has been targeted, destroying the fuel tank and last running generator as shelling in the surrounding area continues. 63 staff and 34 patients remain inside. The facility has no electricity, but continues to receive patients, providing the best possible treatment with no fuel and a severe shortage of medication and medical supplies. The United Nations warned on Wednesday that, quote, zero fuel reserves to operate electricity generators at hospitals across Gaza are placing the lives of patients, including newborns, at grave risk. On Wednesday, the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis announced that all generators at the facility have stopped, and only a small generator is currently operating with an amount sufficient for 3 hours. In a press conference also on Wednesday, the Ministry of Health in Gaza stated that there is no fuel stock in hospitals due to the restrictions imposed on fuel entry and looting, warning that if no additional fuel is received, this will cause a catastrophe affecting the functioning of oxygen generators, medicine refrigerators, and incubators. The health ministry added that a patient died on Wednesday due to the lack of fuel needed to operate kidney dialysis machines. Hours later, the ministry reported that a small amount of fuel to operate hospital generators was received, which would allow for only 24 hours of continuation of services. Our contributor Abu Bakr Abed reported on the kidney disease crisis across Gaza. In a feature we published yesterday, kidney patients face excruciating death in Gaza. Abu Bakr profiled several patients, as well as Abdul Nasser Abu Aisha, the head nurse of the dialysis department at Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah. When the war broke out, we had 106 kidney patients here at the hospital, Abu Aisha said. When the Israeli military launched its ground operations in Rafah in early May, we ended up with nearly five times this number. The numbers of kidney patients have come down now, Abu Aisha said, because half the patients have died in the meantime of various causes, mostly related to hospital overcrowding and the general conditions in Gaza. In order to manage kidney disease, Abu Bakr reports, people are usually told to avoid dirty water and eat a balanced diet. But most humanitarian food assistance comes in the form of canned foods that are not healthy for kidney patients. The preservatives in canned food turn into toxins, taking a heavy toll on their health, Abu Aisha said. And with health services debilitated and medicines scarce, medical professionals are struggling to cope. The war must stop now, Abu Aisha said. There is no other solution. Abu Bakr spoke to a 14-year-old boy, Imad, who nearly died when he fell into a coma during one visit to the hospital. Quote, the boy also has anemia and inflammation and struggles to stand on his feet, his father said. And then there is the pain. My legs always hurt me, Imad told the Electronic Intifada. I can't sleep or do anything. I also haven't eaten bread for 2 days. I don't want to see these tubes on my body anymore. I just want to be like other children, and I want to go home with my family. For more, read Abu Bakr Abed's feature, Kidney Patients Face Excruciating Death in Gaza, on electronicintifada.net. Israel is continuing not just to prevent humanitarian aid, fuel, medicines, and food as the ethnic slaughter entrenches in North Gaza, but it is also continuing to destroy the aid and kill those delivering it. Israeli forces are also bolstering and supporting the actions of armed gangs in looting and deliberately undermining social order. According to the aid group Oxfam this week, quote, of the meager 34 trucks of food and water given permission to enter the North Gaza governorate over the last 2.5 months, deliberate delays and systematic obstructions by the Israeli military meant that just 12 trucks managed to distribute aid to starving Palestinian civilians. For 3 of these, once the food and water had been delivered to the school where people were sheltering, the school was then cleared and shelled within hours. Sally Abi Khalil, Oxfam's Middle East and North Africa director, stated, quote, the situation in Gaza is apocalyptic and people are trapped, unable to find any kind of safety. The absolute desperation of having no food or shelter for your family in the biting cold of winter. It is abhorrent that despite international law being so publicly violated by Israel and starvation being used relentlessly as a weapon of war, world leaders continue to do nothing. The United Nations Under Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator, Tom Fletcher, stated on January 6th that the UN's efforts to save lives are at a breaking point. Fletcher said that, quote, an Israeli strike seriously injured 3 people at a known food distribution point where a partner of the World Food Program was operating. Israeli soldiers fired over 16 bullets at a clearly marked UN convoy at the checkpoint from the south to the north. Armed Palestinian gangs hijacked 6 fuel tankers entering from the Kerem Shalom crossing, leaving us hardly any fuel for aid operations. These incidents are part of a dangerous pattern of sabotage and deliberate disruption. Fletcher added that on January 3rd, Israeli forces increased attacks during the movement of a 74-truck aid convoy. A drone strike hit a vehicle from the local community, which was protecting part of the convoy. And just a few days ago, a UN mission out of Jabalia ran into hostile Israeli soldiers who threatened critical patients and arrested four of them. There is no meaningful civil order, Fletcher stated. Israeli forces are unable or unwilling to ensure the safety of our convoys. Statements by Israeli authorities vilify our aid workers even as the military attacks them. Community volunteers who accompany our convoys are being targeted. There is now a perception that it is dangerous to protect aid convoys, but safe to loot them. Euromed Human Rights Monitor reported this week that Israel's support of organized gangs in Gaza in order to steal humanitarian aid is a deliberate attempt to, quote, spread chaos and insecurity as part of its genocidal war and create disastrous conditions that will result in the destruction of Palestinians in the Strip as a whole. Israel's army has attempted to target members of the security and civil police forces, as well as individuals working to coordinate the entry of humanitarian aid. Since the start of its genocide on October 7, 2023, Israel has been targeting members of these groups or teams while they are working and even while they are in their homes or shelters, Euromed added. The Gaza government media office stated on January 2nd that the Israeli army assassinated Major General Mahmoud Salah, the director general of the Palestinian police in the Gaza Strip, and his assistant Major General Hussam Shawan, quote, in a cowardly assassination operation that targeted them while they were performing their national and humanitarian duty in the Al-Mawasi area in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, which the occupation claims is a safe humanitarian area, resulting in more martyrs and wounded. The media office warned that, quote, this escalation comes with a clear plan by which the Israeli occupation aims to create an administrative and governmental vacuum and spread chaos and security chaos in the Gaza Strip in an attempt to undermine the steadfastness of our people and destabilize them. The horrific rise in the number of martyrs of aid workers to 736 shows the extent of the crimes committed by the occupation, which targets everyone who tries to provide aid and relief to our afflicted Palestinian people. Israel killed two journalists in Gaza this past week. On January 2nd, Israel killed Hassan al-Kashawi in a drone strike. And on January 3rd, Omar Salah al-Dirawi, who is a photojournalist and worked with a number of news agencies, was killed in an Israeli bombing of his house in the Azueda area in the central Gaza Strip, according to the Gaza government media office. This brings the number of journalists and media workers killed by Israel since October 2023 to 202. Finally, as we always do, we wanted to share images of people expressing defiance and resilience in the face of Israel's campaign of destruction. Twitter X user Noor Gaza posted these photos of birds on top of her tent after a rainstorm. She says, quote, I didn't want to let all the rainwater fall off the top of the tent so the birds could drink from it. Ali Juma of North Gaza posted this video of himself, his friend, and children playing during a hailstorm. And journalist Anas Al-Sharif, who is one of the remaining reporters in North Gaza and has been separated from his family because of his work, was reunited with his baby son Salah this week. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza, and also to read Tamara Nassar's important coverage of the situation in the occupied West Bank, which I did not have time to get to.
You've
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.